Welcome to 3GT, the podcast for three guys, a pastor, a professor, and a parishioner discuss theology from a practical standpoint, all from a Reformed perspective. Find out more at 3GT.xyz.
Welcome back to another episode of 3GT, where three guys theologize together. We have the pastor with us, Kyle Borg. I am the parishioner. We have a new P. It is not president or professor. It is Poobah. We have the grand Poobah today. Barry York is with us. He is the professor of RPTS. We are glad that
one of them, just one today. Of them.
One of the,
you I'm said sorry. The professor. I just want to make sure.
I meant the president.
Oh, okay.
El Presidente of the seminary. I apologize. Sometimes we like to have fun on our talks, and sometimes we deal with serious subjects. And today we're going to tackle a subject that is shrouded in some taboo, even for Christians. There's a lot of misunderstanding and just a lot of not talking about it. And that topic is suicide and how we as a church should deal with that issue. The Bible does speak about it. There are, by my count, at least two very explicit stories of suicide in the Bible. Everybody obviously thinks of Judas, but there's also Saul. When he tells his sword boy to run him through. There's obviously these stories in the Bible. They are not kept from us, so we have to deal with them. And there are a lot of issues that we have to deal with. In full disclosure, Kyle went to a community gathering recently where this topic was discussed. And so we thought it would be a good idea to talk about this. Just like a 30,000 foot view, a broad brushstroke view, what are some of the main issues that you guys see as you deal with, as you talk about, as you think about this topic of suicide?
Well, I think, first of all, to note, As you've already mentioned, Scott, we understand this is a sensitive subject. And we understand that many of our listeners have been impacted by suicide, whether family, friends, or have had to think about this in less than ideal circumstances, if I can put it that way, in the reality of life. This isn't an ivory tower discussion. We also recognize that some of our listeners themselves may have thoughts of suicide. And I think even before we get started, to say, if you are there, if you are in that darkness, reach out to somebody immediately, speak to them, whether that's a friend, whether that's a parent, whether that's a pastor or an elder. We want to be very clear about that, because this isn't just a discussion for a fireside chat and an ivory tower experience. As a pastor, I have had to deal with suicide on various levels. I came to a congregation where a number of years ago, one of our members, before I was pastor, committed suicide. His family remains in the church, and even years later, still ministering, shepherding through some of those very, very difficult realities. As a pastor, I have interacted with people in the community who struggle with these thoughts, who wonder, is life really worth living, and having to shepherd them and help them and reach out to them. But also as a pastor, dealing with many of the real questions that Christians have about suicide. Scott, you noted in the Bible, there's at least two examples of Judas and Saul. Now, neither Judas or Saul were saved. We don't believe they were believers. And in the history of the church, there has been such an emphasis that only an unbeliever can commit suicide. And pastorally, you have to interact with that question. You have to be prepared with a biblical answer, but a compassionate answer and a gentle answer, realizing that this is a reality for people. And so And we're going to be answering that question here in this episode. But for me, as a pastor, those are some of the things that I have dealt with when it comes to this topic. And also just aware, my community since moving here has been touched by the reality of suicide many times. I think our county, several suicides a year, and it always seems to shake the communities, and we all kind of step back and begin to assess, you know, what's going on? Why are these young people committing suicide? Why are these older people doing this? And so it's an issue that as a pastor, I've been forced to deal with on different levels.
Yeah, Scott, I would just add to that that I do think this is an issue that you may have been, you know, someone may have been insulated from for a time or season, but pretty soon it seems to strike almost everyone that they either have a family member or know someone who's gone through this. When I was in ninth grade, the telephone rang and I picked it up to hear my grandmother down in North Carolina screaming and crying out for my father. And as I tried to understand what she was saying, all of a sudden I realized that my grandfather had shot himself. And we still don't know today what was going on in my grandfather's mind, what even if he intended to do that, because he was a man who had guns. And there's some things around the shooting of himself that's still not clear whether how intentional it was or not. But just seeing the impact of that on my own parents, my own family. And, you know, sadly, again, I think all of us know of people who've had to face this tragedy. So it's something that you don't want to have to deal with, but eventually you're going to have to do so. And it's important to know how to approach it and to think through that with others. I find it, you know, one of the greatest pastoral challenges that a minister can face is, especially if it happens in his own congregation with someone, is how to minister in that, what to think about it, what to say to God's people about it. So it's important that we're talking about this subject.
And that great segue into the first area I want to delve into is this religious stigma associated with suicide. Kyle, you mentioned that, you know, that there are people who think only sinners commit suicide. How do you, as a pastor, and Barry, as a former pastor, as a professor, you guys counsel many people. How do you handle that question that Kyle brought up? How do you deal with this idea that suicide, as our confession says, is a violation of the sixth commandment? Mm-hmm. All right. Yeah.
Yes.
Brain. Well, and yet, at the same time, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say that I do think, first of all, we have to acknowledge that it is a violation of the sixth commandment. In the larger catechism, when it talks about what are the sins forbidden, it's the first one mentioned. The sins forbidden in the sixth commandment are all taking away the life of ourselves. So it's interesting that in ordering the different kinds of ways that people can commit murder, what it begins with is that we can take away our own life. And so we do have to, first and foremost, just recognize that suicide is a violation of the sixth commandment. It's taking away your own life. And so there may be false religious stigmas that we need to address here. But first and foremost, that's not one of them. That it is not right for someone to take their own life. They don't have that right. Only God has that right. He is the one who gives life, and He is the one who has the right to, and the only one who has the right to truly take it away.
And we need to acknowledge that, and that's difficult. Mm-hmm. Which is why, and I think what we're going to follow this up with is going to be so important. So bear with us. But self-murder is a serious sin. Murder is a serious sin. It is incompatible, the Apostle John says, with eternal life. And we're gonna play that out a little bit, so please bear with us. But first and foremost, we need to acknowledge it's a sin. And that's all the more important in the society in which we live. I went to this community discussion, and the person that was directing this was a director of the suicide hotline. And the very first thing she did as we began to discuss this was remove the moral implications. People have been told that it is immoral. People have been told that it is evil. People have been told that it is wrong. And she basically said at the very outset, we need to remove that idea. Now, she couldn't consistently carry that out because at the same time, she continued to say, it is better for the person to stay alive. And I wanted to point out, well, right there, you acknowledge the morality. It is better to live than it is to take one's life. But we need to be clear about that. There was a popular Netflix series, 13 Reasons, which really romanticized the view of suicide. And even this lady, who doesn't agree with me on my Christian presupposition, said when this Netflix show came out, their call volume went up 70%. And she said that show was a nightmare to all mental health experts who have tried to work through the issue of suicide. She said it has undone so much of what we have tried to do. There is this romanticization, so to speak, of this, and we need to be so guarded as Christians against that, to be able to acknowledge it is sin, it is wrong, it is wrong in the eyes of God.
And I'm no cultural expert, as I've proven many a time on this show, but any music or movie that glorifies, that encourages suicide, that's a message right from the pit of hell. It's evil, and we should not in any way romanticize that. Again, we're going to talk about the other side of this, how we should respond as the church when suicide's committed. But we have to speak out against these messages that somehow that taking your life is some type of solution to the problems that you're facing. And when the church is silent against suicide, it's complicit in this. That's why the church has to speak to this issue. And we have to tell people again that this is a violation of God's purpose for their life.
Yeah. And I think one of the things I wanted to follow up to is, Kyle, you mentioned shame. And I think we've done an episode on shame. It's been a while back. Mm-hmm. But how do you deal with the shame aspect, not only of a person who may be contemplating this, but a family member of somebody who has committed suicide and the shame they feel having to deal with it? Because when I ask about the religious stigma, it wasn't on necessarily just the person who committed suicide, but the family, the immediate family, who now have to pick up the pieces and have to defend their loved one. And there's a certain amount of shame. How do you deal with that?
I think one thing that we have to say, if someone's thinking about suicide, is you think you're solving a problem by your action, but please think about the people you're connected to, because I don't care who you are, you're connected to a network of people, family members. There are people who care about you, and this is not the way to go. And if you take your life, you are leaving this huge hole, especially in your family. You are subjecting them to a great deal of heartache and shame that they'll have to deal with. So I just want to put that warning out there first and foremost to anyone thinking about this, because again, all of us have experienced what it's like to try to come along someone or a family who's suffered the loss of someone they cared about.
And when it comes to dealing with the shame of one who might be contemplating suicide, we need to remember that the gospel is light, and that light exposes the deeds of darkness. And yeah, of course there's shame. I would think it would be very hard for anybody to contemplate suicide and not feel some sense of shame that these thoughts are even entering into my brain, because we have the law of God written on our hearts, and we know that this is wrong. And we need to bring the gospel to expose those works of darkness, to search the inner chambers of the heart, to say, you know, even this, even these feelings that you're having, the darkness that you've descended into, there is a light, and it's the light of the gospel, and it's able to shine into this. As far as helping family members who deal with shame, you know, I like how you put that, Scott, that sometimes family members will feel that they need to defend their loved one. And let us never let the church be a place where somebody has to defend a loved one. We need to come alongside and weep and mourn and grieve. You know, loved ones are, never will a family member need to defend their loved one. They shouldn't have to do that in the context of the church. We should recognize this is a death, and though it's a death that was a death by choice, it doesn't make it any less heartbreaking, any less grief-filled, if not even more so. And so that's where the church really needs to rise up to be the church, to minister to serve to weep with, and never stand in this condescending position where you better defend your loved one to me. That's not being a Christian in my mind.
Okay. But I really appreciate that. There's just a sensitivity that I think needs to be in place when you're dealing with this topic. I'm not a touchy feely, you know, kind of guy, but I mean, there is an earnestness, I think, that has to be in the hearts of God's people when dealing with suicide, and those who are thinking about it, and those who are dealing with the aftermath. What do you guys see as the proper response? Kyle, you mentioned that the communities today, particularly the rural communities, are really affected with this, I guess, epidemic of suicide. You know, the rural community sees a higher rate of suicide than the urban counterpart. But what do you think the church's proper response to this epidemic is? And I know that the pat answer is, well, we need to faithfully preach the gospel. So you're not allowed to answer with that. How do you guys see a way for the church to properly engage this issue in our communities?
I think it begins with preparation. You know, as Barry said, this is inevitably going to touch people's lives. Suicide, in one sense, knows no demographics. It's not a man problem versus a woman's problem, white versus black, rich versus poor. Suicide crosses all the demographic lines. And a church needs to be prepared. Pastors and elders especially need to be prepared. This is not an issue you want to be making up a pastoral response to in the heat of the moment. This is one that I think you need to prepare for by studying the scriptures, by being aware of what the scriptures teach, by thinking through the comfort that the scriptures hold forth. So that would be my first point is preparation, but I'll let Barry weigh in.
Well, again, just to agree with what you're saying, Kyle, just looking at a few of the statistics, suicide's the 7th leading cause of death for men and the 14th leading cause of death for women. Young people, it's the 2nd leading cause of death if people are between the ages of 15 to 24. So that's just tragic and sad that 2nd leading cause of death among our teenagers and young adults in our land is them taking their life by their own hand. And so we've got to acknowledge that and really work hard in the church to prepare and help people. So I think, you know, so often one of the things that we often start with here at 3GT is because of our view of preaching. I think we've got to start addressing this from the pulpit as churches. And I think it behooves elders and pastors to have some honest discussions, maybe even with their deacons who should be concerned about those who could be left in need, to think of ways to be addressing this in a proactive way rather than what often many of us have to do is to react to it when it strikes unexpectedly. So that if we started perhaps talking about it among our youth, whether it's sermons on Sunday morning or the youth conferences or youth gatherings, to really begin to address it. I think it's one of those topics that we don't want to talk about. In some ways, you don't want to put the idea in anyone's mind. But again, I think that type of ignorance is bliss is just not going to work because of what we're seeing around us. So I would think really starting to address it when we're talking to young people. Even as I sit here, I didn't have this idea, particular idea, until just this moment, but I've been asked to speak to my daughter's high school group here in a couple of months. And, you know, maybe as I've been thinking about what topics to address, it just makes me think, well, maybe this needs to be one of them. Because even at a Christian school, we all, again, know believers, professing believers who have taken their own life. So I think preparing people first and foremost to do that, to have, you know, your deacons to think about ministering to people in the community or, again, in the congregation that have had this issue strike them would be important. Again, sadly, I'm in a congregation where we've had a situation or two arise in this regard, and I'm thankful to see our church's loving response to that, to really surround the family members with love and really concrete support from an elder doing family worship with children for a long period of time to help with home construction to other counsel that's been given. I think all those concrete things that we can do to show people that we care and love for them is very important to do.
And maybe to get us maybe to where you might want to go next, Scott, I can't read your brain, but to also not stigmatize suicide as something beyond the Christian experience. Mm-hmm. Thoughts of suicide, faith can endure dark seasons. Job sits in the ash heap and he bemoans the very day he was created. Job shows us, even as he is commended as the patient sufferer, I think it's very true. Many people will say people who commit suicide, it's not that they want to die. Is that they want the pain to stop. They want the hurt, their darkness and their struggle to come to an end. And death seems to be the only relief. And as uncomfortable as it may be, that can be a Christian experience. Faith can endure seasons of tremendous darkness. And I think Job stands there. Job, probably one of the very first books of the Bible written, God is teaching us in a fallen world, here's a theology of suffering, and this is the depths to which one who is blameless in his generation can descend to. So I would say not stigmatizing it beyond and removing it from the possibility of being a Christian experience.
And Kyle, I really appreciate what you're saying there, is that I think a proper theology of suffering is really important to keep teaching and training the church in, that to become a Christian isn't to enter into a life of a complete 100% joy day by day, but that we will have valleys, we will have difficulties, we will have struggles, and to teach the church how to suffer is really important part of that. So to go to places like Job, I guess you're preaching from there right now. So.
Yeah, I regret it every Monday morning. But really, with Barry,
can I just add one quick thing, and then I'll let you get back to it. But I think this is also where biographies are important. People looking at those who have suffered greatly. You know, you take someone like a Corrie ten Boom, who is arrested for hiding Jews during World War II and suffers in the concentration camp, and seeing all that she endured and all she suffered. But her faith helped her to triumph, even the loss of a beloved sister who had been so mistreated. And so we need to go to other people and see what they've gone through, and that can give us the strength as we see Christ in them to carry on.
Yeah, and just to emphasize, and you know, maybe I've said this before, but I'm convinced as a pastor that next to having our congregations understand the gospel and the unique role of the church, that pastors need to be preaching and praying in a way that prepares congregations to suffer to the glory of God. I think it is one of the most pivotal aspects of biblical discipleship.
Those are two very important things. One of my follow-up questions was going to be, what are some ways that we individually need to be prepared to address this issue? I know we depend a lot upon the church, and we should, but in our lives and our families, there may be times that you and I, just as not as pastors or professors or even a ruling elder, may be called to deal with one of these situations where somebody is hurting. Maybe walk through what you would do, not as a pastor, not as a professor, not as an elder, not as a church member, but a father, a brother, a son, a friend. How do you see walking through this issue with somebody who is contemplating or suffering and dealing with depression in such a way that they are thinking about this? How do you approach that?
Oh man, that, thinking of the experiences that I've had, in some ways it's hard to generalize because these things, you come at them from different angles depending on what the individual is going through. But I would say first and foremost, a frank but gentle honesty. When you're dealing with people who are suffering greatly or dealing with people in the depths of depression, I've resolved that as a pastor, I need to just be prepared to ask people awkward questions. And maybe as Christians, we need to learn to do that. And to be very honest, are you contemplating suicide? Because we all know what it is to hide these things. And there's a part of us that probably desperately wants people to know because we don't want to be hiding, but there's the shame, there's the guilt, there's the fear of coming out and talking about it. So to be willing to initiate a conversation like that, to be willing to listen, to be willing and able to direct people to resources, that was one of the first things that I did when I became a pastor is what are the resources available in my county and in my community? If this is on the brink of an emergency that's beyond what a pastor can do or a church member, who can I direct them to immediately? And what's available out there? To love them, to affirm the value that they are not only created in the image of God, but if they are a believer, they are redeemed by Jesus Christ in body and in soul. Bring those truths to bear, but I think just cultivating that openness and to let people know, you can speak to me about this. My jaw's not going to hit the ground, right? That's the worst response you can give. You're what? You rein it in. Exercise a little bit of the fruit of the Spirit and self-control, and gently deal with these issues and people that are struggling with it.
Yeah, I think the ministry of incarnation, just that we have to be present with people and walk with them. And as he said, to not think of it as the church or whatever, but I have a hard time not thinking at least about the church, that we have to, as the body of Christ, we have to be a place where really hurting people can know they can come there. It's sad to me when I find out people feel like they have to go to some counselor far away because they just don't feel like they can open up in the church. And again, I'm not speaking against counseling. It has its place, but the church really has to be a place where there's an openness. The people know that they're loved and cared for. And that, as Kyle said, if you come and share or talk to me about something you're struggling with, I'm going to walk with you and help you in that struggle, not condemn you. And to see that this not, again, just the pastor doing that, but that the whole congregation is a body where people are doing that for one another.
Well, we certainly have not covered every topic that we could cover on this issue. Just really scratched the surface. Is there anything, as we wrap our discussion up on this episode, is there anything that either one of you want to point out or to say in conclusion?
There's one thing that I really want to add, just so our listeners are very aware. the question is inevitably going to come up, can a Christian commit suicide? And we may not have stated it as explicitly as we could, but I think, I'm going to go out on a limb, I think the agreed upon consensus here is yes, a believer can commit suicide. It is not an unpardonable sin. It is not the single only defining moment of one's life. You know, if I were to get in a big fight with my wife when we get done recording this podcast, and I were to get so angry with her and lash out at her for no good reason, and I were to get into my car, drive down the highway, miss the turn, hit a telephone pole and die, in a sense, I didn't take my life, but it was my sin that led to my death. And does that mean in that moment that I'm not going to go to heaven? Well, no, it doesn't, because Jesus Christ has died for my sins. He has borne the weight of my sins. Jesus has lived the perfect life that I could never live. And by faith, his death and his life has been made mine when I trust in him. And yet that faith is going to be embattled in 1,000 different ways between now and eternity. And if in that last moment I die with embattled faith, that does not become the determining moment of my life as to whether or not I'm a Christian. And so to apply that to this thing of suicide, I do believe believers can commit suicide. I do not think it is an automatic sign that one is an unbeliever. It's a sign. It can be a sign of embattled faith. But again, that the last moment of our life is not more definitive than every other moment of our life when we stand before God.
Mm-hmm. I appreciate you pointing that out.
I think the Bible does, again, show believers can murder, like David murdered, and yet God forgave him. And so I really agree with what Kyle is saying. I would add a few things, though. I would add that often people who have been known to be professing believers have actually been, that have committed suicide, have been living secret lies and not really had a true, as further evidence shows. And I had a situation like this in my own congregation where I pastored, and as further evidence showed, we're really living a secretive life of sin, not one of faith in Jesus. And so, you know, we have to look at, honestly, at the picture. Just because someone says that they're a Christian and then they kill themselves doesn't necessarily mean that. But again, it's still very possible that there are scenarios like Kyle is mentioning where a true believer could take their life. And then I would just quickly add to that, please don't. And if you're a professing believer, there is hope. There is a way out. There is a way of escape. And this is not the way for you to escape whatever ill you're facing, whatever shame you're facing. You want to live eternally, even now. You want to live for eternity, even now. And there is still work for you to do. There's still fruit to be born. There are still people that you need to love, and you can find hope if you'll go to someone that can truly help you. So I just would plead to anyone listening who's thinking about this to find help.
And if you're not a professing believer,
yes.
The gospel of Jesus Christ, it is Christianity alone that can make sense of our suffering, even the mm-hmm. darkness that leads people to do this. And so look to the gospel and look mm-hmm. to Jesus.
Well, with those words of encouragement, we will bring this episode to a close. We thank you for joining us, and we encourage you to visit us at 3gt.xyz, Facebook page. We're always appreciative of correspondence we receive. Donations are always appreciated as well. But thank you again for joining us, and we hope you have a great time.